Welcome back. The kid that did. You already know what time it is. Norris, Odiase, another episode. Mind Bully Podcast is the platform. Mind Bully Pod is the pod. What's good, squad? If it's your first time listening to this podcast, bear with me. I got a lot of hyper juice going this morning, this evening, and I'm glad that you're here with me. Quick shout out, Sarah DJ78 says, super interesting to hear your perspective, insightful, fun, and relevant. 5 stars. She says, it's great. Thank you so much, Sarah. I really appreciate you. And to the rest of you that are rating and reviewing this podcast from the bottom of my heart, I'm so thankful for you listening and tuning in each and every week. If you haven't listened to last week's episode with DeMarcus Holland, holding on to hope, I would do that. Hold on to this episode after you hold on to that one. Listen to that. It was a great episode. But let's get this show on the road, baby. We got a good one. This week's guest, professional basketball player, former Red Raider, 4-time starter on a first ever Elite Eight team in Texas Tech history, Mr. Justin Gray, a bright kid from a bright city, Tampa, Florida. Justin grew up wanting to really do one thing. He wanted to make his parents proud. From early struggles in the classroom to getting a Harvard scholarship offer, he made his mom proud. From struggling on the court to getting multiple high major basketball offers, he made his pops proud. But this story, this episode, Justin walks us through his ongoing journey in making himself proud. And he shares the mental battle and striving for something and not seeing the immediate results. Keep pushing, finding the motivation in the steps of climbing every single step of the way. Finding that motivation within, finding that pride within. He shares the battle in that and staying locked in to his goals each and every step of the way. He shares his story. And man, I'm so excited to share and showcase this conversation because I know that it'll impact somebody. Let's get this going.
Yes, sir.
Young,
long time coming. Yes, sir.
J5 in the building. How I start these episodes is we chop it up like we are, but this episode is specifically special because of you, bro. We came to Texas Tech together. We're close. We had a relationship that started literally from the onset from 2014, and now you see Texas Tech how it is. But before that, I just want to reintroduce the man. As you hear this now, you'll hear me talking to you, but there would already have been an intro. But Mr. Justin Gray, welcome to the podcast.
My boy King No, appreciate you for having me, dog. Yes, sir.
Nah, it's special because this guy, I think you're, a close teammate like I had, a close brother that I have, but like, probably the smartest teammate I've ever had, like intellectually. Yeah. So I'm really happy about this one to have somebody pour in one that he did for the team, Tech, myself, and my life, but just for life. He has so many interests that he's into, and he has a mindset that's kind of elevated beyond most. So, no, again, thank you for coming on the podcast, bro.
Absolutely, my pleasure, man. Love to be here. You know, long time coming. As soon as you dropped, you know, you were doing a podcast, I couldn't wait to get on it. You know what I'm saying? So I've been a big, you know, avid supporter, man. Like, listen to all of them. Got your channel on my phone.
That's
you
love.
Know what I'm saying? So I'll definitely be supporting, man, and I love what you're doing. You know, you just getting started with it, so I'm just excited to see, you know, where it takes you.
Love. Appreciate it. Well, to start, Justin, I always ask my guest, and I like to think and to revert back to childhood. So if I am to understand the man you are today, what do I need to know about Justin Gray's upbringing? Like, what made you, and what are the factors that made who you are today?
First and foremost, you know, growing up, I grew up just in a, you know, mid-class, on blue-collar, you know, hard-working family, you know, just grew up, you know, obviously having, you know, both of my parents, you know, still together, you know, happily married, you know, over 40 plus years. So, you know, just really making goals, you know, in terms of, you know, just being with a partner, significant other, you know, just seeing that growing up, you know, just kind of made me really realize, you know, what to look for in terms of, you know, just, you know, somebody else. But, you know, to counter off that, like, my mom worked at a Catholic church pretty much my whole life. She still works there, you know, today, St. Paul Catholic Church. So I went there when I was little, man, just, you know, learning about good morals and, you know, learning about the Bible and just pretty much falling in love with God and my faith at a really early age. And it just made me really treat people the way I want to be treated. And I was like that since a little kid, you know, just always respectful, always showing love, always giving, sometimes too much, you know, but, you know, that's just the way, you know, my parents raised me. And it's kind of evident now, like today, bro, like I'm so blessed to see like how I interact with people. Like people typically don't interact with people like that. You know what I'm saying? Like when I do something for somebody or show love or like support or whatever the case is, a small gesture, people are like, you know, kind of taken back by it. They're right. Like, dang, bro, like I didn't know, you know, like nobody's done that for me before. You know what I'm saying? I was just like, it's not something to get out of you. It's just like, I'm just a genuine person, bro. Like right. I love, whoever I'm with, my teammates, like I'm gonna fight for them, you know, to the death of me. And, you know, my dad growing up, it was a tough relationship, man, because he was so hard on me, like so hard on me, bro. Like me and him did not have like a good relationship, like growing up, just like obviously the respect factor. But like, right. Yo, he was on my ass, bro. Like I'll drop 25, 30 points a game when I was little or like, you know, growing up. You know, he's constantly in the car telling me all the stuff I did wrong, not saying one good thing, man, just making me so hot. But that kind of built that motivation, that determination to always like, I wanted to, you know, impress him, you know, right. I wanted to make my father proud and finally get him to say something, you know what I'm saying? But he was never like that, bro. Not until, you know, I got to Tech. But, you know, he kind of, you know, definitely made my work ethic I get from him, you know, because he'd be working, you know, all day, every day, man, like 12, 13 hour, you know, day shifts, 3-4 hours of sleep, wakes back up, you know, and gets right back at it. So just seeing that growing up, just kind of made me feel like, man, like my mom got 2-3 jobs, my dad got 2 jobs, like, and they making it work, you know what I'm saying? Right. And they showing me love, and they raising me, and they putting food on the table. So it was like, what is my perception of the hard work? What can I do in my life, you know, to kind of match, you know, where they're at? And I kind of just took it in terms of school and basketball. That's kind of where I put my focus in growing up. I was kind of introverted. I didn't really have a lot of friends, like, in high school. I was popular, I would say, but, like, I didn't really, you know, party. I was just working out and going to school, bro. Like, that's it. You know, I was locked in. Right. And obviously, when that Tech offer came in, that was, like, a blessing in disguise, man, because I really wasn't getting recruited like that. And, you know, luckily, you know, they recruited me. Tubby saw something in me that, you know, just a lot of people didn't see. And, you know, that's kind of when I was hooked, man. Like, that was the first offer I got. Them in Harvard, and then that was it. And then, but I rock with Tubby. You already know, man. Tubby's just a good loving dude. Was straight up honest with me, man. Like, was like, bro, you come to Tech, like, I'm not guaranteeing you playing time. Like, yeah. I'm not finna tell you that. My dad sitting right there, he was like, you're gonna have to work your ass off. And like, that's what I wanted to be a part of. And then also, you know, on the flip side, like, my first question was like, all right, well, who I'm coming in with? That was my first question. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Then, they started off with, obviously, with Zach, you know, Keenan, Dorrance. And so, you know, I said, okay. I said, it's a little squad. I was just like, but obviously, you guys weren't committed at the time. I had committed. Mm-hmm. Then Zach committed. And then I'm not sure if it was Keenan or you after that.
I think it was Keenan.
And then that's when I knew you was going to commit. After all three of us committed, I said, Dorrance committed, bro. Got to. But yeah, bro, I had a great childhood, man. Like, you know, don't take back nothing. Never really needed or, you know, went without, you know, anything. My parents made sure I had, you know, everything I needed, pretty much, you know, the basics. Yeah, it's made me into the man I am today.
But I think that is, one, your timeline and your ability to kind of remember all that and walk us through every single step. It kind of puts us in the mind of Justin, like, I'm getting love. And if I come home from a game, my mom's giving me all this love, but my pops is like, you could have got 40. You could have done more. Like, it's putting us in the emotions and putting us in the mindset of how you were. So thank you for that timeline. But if we were to revert back to that, I know Justin to be a smartass, brilliant. His brother went to Cornell. What were, I guess, your parents' requirements, whether it's grades and the things that you did? You know you were locked in on the court, but
right.
I feel like you had to be, for you to be so bright like you are, you had to be on your P's and Q's and everything, like literally. So what were your requirements? How was it growing up where you had the pressure of performing on the court, but also in the classroom. What was your day to day like?
Bro, I'll tell you something. I haven't really told a lot of people this. So I originally went to St. Paul Catholic Church, you know, for like pre-K, kindergarten and stuff like that. Then I went to a public school, elementary, big public school. And then I went to Berkeley, my private school, which is like the number one academic school in Florida. You know, my mom was trying to get me, you know, to go there for, I was on a waiting list for like 3 years, you know?
What?
Yeah, bro. Like, she was like obsessed with me going to this school. My older brother was going, but I wanted to stay in public school. I was a public school baby, you know what I'm saying? So it was just, I wanted to stay with my friends and, you know, grow up with my friends, my childhood friends. And, you know, I finally got in middle school. I went, bro, I'm the only black kid in middle school, bro.
Really?
Only black kid in middle school. So I'm feeling just, you know, obviously I'm uncomfortable. Like, I realize these things. Like, I don't know anybody. It's, we wearing uniforms. Like, it's the whole, you know, shebang. Like, they learning German and Chinese and Latin in sixth grade. I'm like, I realize how far back, you know, I really was,
right,
know, from private school to public school. Not saying there aren't any good public schools, but, you know, with my situation where I was at, it was like, you know, it was a shelter shock. Like, I was like overwhelmed, kind of. I was just like, yo, they speak in Chinese and a sixth grade, bro. Like, that's crazy to me.
Right.
And bro, I almost failed out my first year.
Really?
Yeah. I ain't told nobody that. I almost failed out my first year. And I was playing basketball. I was hooping and stuff. Made the eighth grade team. You know, as a sixth grader starting and stuff. So it was good. But my mom got that report card back, bro, and sat me down and was like, you gonna see me tomorrow morning. That's all she said, right? I don't know what that meant. So I'm like, all right. So she drops me to school. She leaves, right? I'm not thinking anything of it. First period starts. Yo, my mom walks into my class and sits in the back with a notepad and a pen and is just taking notes. Uh-huh. And she's in my worst class. You know my mom's, bro. My mom is like very, like, she don't play.
Yeah.
So she came to my worst class, English class. Like, I was failing it 100%. And just taking notes. And I was just like, kind of just, you know, timid, like just seeing my mom got me over my shoulder. I didn't say nothing the whole class, bro. Nothing. After class, mom come up. What was wrong with you? How come you're not opening your mouth? How come you're not answering questions? You got an F in this class. Yada, yada, yada. I was just like, mom, like, I don't really know this stuff. Like, I'm uncomfortable with you being here. I didn't know you were going to do that. You know what I'm saying? And then when my mom's like, okay, well, until further then, the teacher's standing right there too. Miss Grimaldi, love her to death. You know, never forget her, bro. She was just like, for the next month, you're going to be in her office every single day after school for tutoring for 2 hours. And until you get your grades up, that's when you're going to start playing basketball again.
Wow. Wait, so, just to not to cut you off, bro.
No, you good.
There's something that you said. You said that you were on the eighth grade team basketball wise as a sixth grader. That's one. So your dad, it seems like your dad pushing you getting better in on the sport that you love. But your mom like, nah, I don't care about none of that. If your grades ain't right, you're not going to play.
Period.
So how could you kind of break? Keep going with your story. I don't want to cut you off. Tell us like how the two worlds collided and got you to the point of getting a Harvard scholarship offer.
Right. I mean, I'm a mama's boy, bro. First and foremost, like, that's my heart. That's my world. That's like my everything. So, you know, seeing her so disappointed in me, I've never wanted to upset, disappoint my mom, like, in my life, like, ever. You know, so seeing how upset she got, you know, how much she cared and how disappointed she was, you know, and not going to say lack of effort, because it wasn't like I wasn't trying in school. You know, I just wasn't getting it. It was just at an accelerated rate that I wasn't really accustomed to. But, you know, just seeing how she reacted and how much, you know, she wanted me to be successful and how hard she was being on me in terms of, you know, saying cutting out basketball, you know, and then. What really got me was when she was like, if you don't change your grades, she was like, screw the season. You're not playing AAU either. So I was like, yo, you already know at that age, AAU is everything in the summer.
Everything.
Bro. Everything. You know what I'm saying? The trips, hotel rooms with your guys, you know, you running in the hallways, going in different rooms, all that stuff. So, you know, I really had to, you know, sit back at an early age and just be like, look, you know, even though my basketball is getting, you know, better, you know, I'm progressing and I'm hitting all these goals. It's not going to mean anything if I don't have the grades.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to prove to my mom that I kind of belonged at that school because she worked so hard to get me there. Didn't really understand why until obviously I was in school. And it was just like, damn, there's a lot of stuff that like, I don't know, bro. Yeah. So I was like, you know, let me lock in. And that was very mature for me to do at that age.
Yes.
And again, like it goes to just trying to impress my mom, bro. Like just trying to make her happy. Anything I could do.
That's beautiful. You literally talked about trying to prove, well, please your mom, make her happy, and your dad. You started right. off saying that. And I think if a lot of people listening, they can resonate with that, wanting to make their parents proud. I also right. resonate with that in your story. But there's something that you didn't say. Did you like it? Did you? What about you? There's a lot of people listening, right? They'll be like, right. they'll understand. I'm going my way. They'll understand. But like, you said something on the onset. You were like, sometimes you give too much love or you care right. too much about what people think. How was it for you knowing that you wanted to do this for your parents, but your friends that you missed out on going to the public school or what you initially wanted to do?
Right.
Did you have to sacrifice yourself to do what your parents wanted, or how was that? Take me through the initial emotions and kind of how you were as a person in that time.
Yeah, in that time, and like I said, like going from public school, being with all my friends, being on the waiting list for that school, so I wasn't even in the school yet. Yeah. I was, you know, going to public middle school, had everything set up. This is the crazy part. So this is how fast it hit me. Bro, I get my class schedule. Everything, locker combo, they send everything for the public school, middle school that I'm about to go to.
Right.
Berkeley, my high school, the private school, they accept me a week before classes start. And then my mom's literally like, you're going.
We out. We out.
So like pretty much like I'm making all these plans, you know, with my boys and my friends and stuff, you know, about how we going to be in middle school and how yeah. we going to come up and,
yeah.
you know, playing with each other and stuff. And I'm excited. And then she tell me like, no, you're transferring schools. So I was just like, nah. Like I said no at first. You know what I'm saying? I was like, nah. Like I can't leave my friends. And then she was just like, you know, pretty much at that point in time, bro, I didn't really understand what she was trying to do for me. She was trying to obviously do what was best for me. That didn't resonate with me at all at that point in time. I was just obviously being selfish, thinking about my friends, thinking about me, and not really thinking about my future. She was always thinking about my future. And, you know, I was very depressed, but like I said, like when I first got there, like just did not want to be there. And I would say that kind of added to me, you know, not doing well my first year.
Right.
I just did not want to be there. But just as time went on and as I, like I said, started, you know, studying, getting tutored after school and, you know, kind of finally starting to get it and things are starting to click. And I finally started seeing myself doing good in school. Then seeing how happy my mom got, like it yeah. made me feel good. You know what I'm yeah. saying? And I was just like, I said, damn, hold on. Like, you kind of smart, bro. Like,
right.
I said, damn, you came a long way, bro.
You damn was, right. You yeah. damn right. Leading up to a Harvard offer.
Absolutely.
When you
bro.
Got the offer from Harvard, right?
Right.
What were the initial emotions when you looked at your mom to where she was literally in your English class to where you didn't say a damn word? She was like, boy, turn it up
yeah.
to getting an offer to Harvard. Like that switch. Take me to that time. What were the emotions initially when you got that?
Man, I couldn't believe it, honestly. You know, it was, you know, my brother being in Ivy League, going to Cornell and playing and hooping and watching him. That was kind of the route I was kind of used to, especially mm-hmm. me being in a private school setting in high school. I was kind of used to that Ivy League, you know, educational, accelerated education side. And I was kind of comfortable, you know, going that route, especially, you know, just seeing how heavy they rock with me at the time with coach, you know, Tommy Amaker, who's a great, great, great guy, man. Like he literally came to see me, bro, like 2 times a week, literally like, would just sit down with me, watch me work out. So like the typical day for me, bro, in high school, really, I mean, since I was there as a sixth grader, I kept the same routine all the way till I graduated. I wake up at 5:30. My mom would drive me because she had to be at church at like 7 a.m. So she would drive me, drop me off at like 6. I know the custodians, so I was real cool with the custodians. They opened the gym up for me. You know, my assistant coach Ron Williams would meet me there too. he would get out the gun and stuff and pretty much, you know, kind of train me. Like, that whole time, you know, just becoming the player I was, it was more like kind of training myself. Like, I kind of just took, you already know who I'm about to say, watching Bron highlights all day, every day.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just trying to apply that into my game, you know, somehow, some way, you know, whether that's just the little things, IQ, you know, seeing things on the court and, like, just trying to implement that and replicate that, you know, kind of just in the gym by myself at 6 a.m. in the morning, like, every day. Then I go to school at 8, you know, go to class. We have lunch at, like, 12. I would eat, go to the gym, get a quick workout in, go back to class. Shit would end at, like, 3. And then after school, you know, I'd do all my homework, get it done for, like, 2-3 hours straight. You know, be done at like 6, and then I'll be in the gym until like 9-10 o'clock at night. And then my moms will come or my dad will come after work and pick me up at like 11. And I just wake up and do it again.
That is crazy. As at an early age, you were detail oriented, not just on the court, but off the court, like getting an offer from Harvard. I guess when you're charged by your family and different things, like you're going through life, like paving your path, wanted to prove your parents right. You get the Harvard offer, but then you take the Texas Tech offer. When you go to a prep school, I could imagine, like, everybody's like, what? He got Harvard? Go to Harvard, 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 Harvard. And then they hear you like, wait, you going to love it, Texas, Texas Tech?
No,
take me to that week. Walk me through that week.
Bro, you have no idea, man. So I get the offer from Harvard, right? I'm still shocked myself. Like, it was a huge accomplishment. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I would get an offer from Harvard. You know, it's a school that you hear growing up and as being one of the most elite schools in the entire world. So my mom's looking at me once Coach Amaker called me and pretty much I had it on speaker, gave me the offer. I hung up the phone, you know, thanked them and stuff. My mom looking at me like, what the look like, boy, you know you ain't got no damn choice. like she was just like, you know, to have, and from her perspective, but like, I feel it. Like, you gotta understand, like, for being, obviously my mom's from the Virgin Islands, like, she grew up, you know, with nothing, like, and it kind of, you know, made herself into, you know, the woman she is today, played college volleyball, you know, successful, you know, all that, you know, one of the most remarkable women, is the most remarkable woman in my life, I think, for sure. But she was, you know, having, you know, two sons, both in the Ivy League, bro. Like, from where she came from, like, I understood where she was coming from. Like, that's huge. You know, that's huge. That's huge.
Dubs.
That's dead.
Sure.
That's dubs for sure. You know, kind of like, you know, she could low key flex that a little bit.
Duh. Yes.
She could definitely flex that a little bit. But my dad, on the other hand, you know, was looking at it obviously more from the basketball side. You know, calling a spade was just saying, you know, it is Ivy League, it's different, you know, it's not really, not saying there's not high level basketball in the Ivy League, but compared to the 12 and, you know, SEC, ACC, PAC, you know, Pac-10, whatever you want to pick, like, it's not, that's high major, you know what I'm saying? He's like, I view you as a high major, you know, type of player. And I was like, well, Dad, like, I ain't got no high major offers yet. You know what I'm saying? I just got Harvard. So, you know, fast forward, I verbally commit to Harvard.
Whew.
Verbally committed to Harvard. Everybody in my school know. Tech offer ain't come yet.
Yeah.
Do a tournament. No, I go crazy. I'm not going to lie, bro. Like, I went Keenan Evans crazy.
What's up, like, huh? What's up?
I was dropping 30, had two buzzer beaters in front of Tubby.
What's up, huh?
And then we at McDonald's, bro. I'm ordering a Big Mac with some fries. Tubby called me. And then, you know, extends the offer. And, like, my, like, heart just dropped. But that was, like, my first high major, you know, offer. Two three-star recruit, bro. Like, it was an emotional time for me. Like, I broke down, like, for real. Because, like, all the hard work that I put in and, you know, where I knew I wanted to get myself to. Not that I would be settling with Harvard in no stretch of the imagination. But
yeah.
I wanted to play at a high major, you know, big time ESPN, you know, level.
Yeah.
With combination, building something. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted, bro. I knew that since I was a JIT. You know, I wanted to be a part of something and build something and like, you know, bring excitement back to, you know, somewhere. I did that at my high school. You know, I was the first player to, you know, take him to states, you know, 2 years in a row. So it was just something that you know, I really, you know, wanted to do. And I felt like Tech was like, you know, the perfect opportunity for that. So, you know, when Tubby, you know, extended that, I said, yo, set the visit up.
What's up?
Set the visit up ASAP. Set the visit up ASAP. So I went, bro, and you already
the
know,
rest
right?
Is
I didn't. I don't even have to tell you. Like, I fell in love, bro. I didn't even want to leave. You know,
yeah.
At Todrick, you know, A. Ross, Jay Crockett, all them boys, Luke Clark. So like all them guys, man, were at my visit and just made me feel very comfortable, very at home, man. Like I was family, and like I was like, this is I could see myself here for the next 4 years, mm-hmm. And that's the big thing, bro. Like I wanted to stay all 4 years. That was like my vision. Like I wanted to stay no matter what. You know, get my degree, you know, give back to the city, you know, give, you know, Lubbock, Texas Tech, like everything that I had, you know, in me, because I had, you know, just that passionate, you know, first love I had as soon as I landed.
Right.
And so when I came back from that, obviously I told my mom, I was like, look, I said, this is not even comparable for me. Like I was like, I want to go to Tech. And that was a hard conversation. With her, and you know, once I pretty much, that was like her first time really seeing me as a man, like standing up and making a decision for myself.
Right.
So that's what she really appreciated from it.
And it's kind of like you showed her, like, mom, I went from a place where you were in my English class again, and I ain't say a word, and you got on my ass to getting a Harvard offer, like. I did what you wanted me to do, but now it's like I'm writing my own path, and I want to take this journey leading on to Texas Tech. And when you got to Texas Tech, through everything that you've been through, you got your first high major offer. I guess people from back home probably didn't think you were going to start. You ended up starting your freshman year. Can you walk me through your freshman season to getting a Harvard offer, to switching to Texas Tech, to starting? And then to having an injury, mentally, emotionally, physically, can you take me to how you were in that time when you stepped on, but then when you had the injury that you faced? Walk me through that time.
So I decommitted from Harvard, you know, committed to Tech. High school went crazy. You know, what are you doing? I had teachers coming to me, principals coming to me, you know, counselors coming to me. What are you doing? Like, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. Like, you know, there's only like, you know, less than, you know, 1% or something that get accepted into Harvard and stuff like that. And you're crazy. Like, where is Tech? Tech is, you know, not even anywhere close to Harvard. And why are you going to Tech, man? Like, they're the last place in the Big 12. Y'all are just talking about straight negative stuff. That's what I knew. I was like, see, I want to prove all these people wrong. Mm. Everybody wrong. You know, everybody disrespecting Tech. What is Tech? Where is that? Lubbock, what is Lubbock? I'm like, you know, just disrespecting the city, man. So I was just like, you know what? Boom, I'm set. I'm locked in. I'm ready. I graduated, bro. Next day, flew out.
Next day,
flew out. Graduated. Next day, flew out. My parents came with me. You know, moved me in and stuff. Obviously, with Coach Esposito, you know, moving me in, helping me move and stuff. But you know, just that summer, bro. Like, I have never been locked in more in my life. I'd probably say since I was in middle school, like that hunger kind of came back to me. And I kind of, you know, obviously, you know, I had to prove myself, earn my spot, as we all did. And, you know, I just want to put my time in and work hard. You know, I wasn't really anticipating starting, but I worked, you know, my ass off as if I was going to start.
Right.
If that makes sense. So like, that was my mindset, you know, coming in. You know, anytime we worked out, like trying to go, you know what we was lifting, you know what I'm saying? Like, just kind of, you know, competing with everybody and, you know what I'm saying, just going through that grind and struggle and putting that time in. And I fell in love with the process. Like, I had my own process, you know, in high school, you know, like I told you, you know, kind of the day in the life of what I did. But, you know, Tech was like, that was on steroids, what we
Facts.
Were doing.
You Facts. Know what I'm saying?
Like, that was, like, anybody, I asked anybody, like, if you ever want to play, like, Division I basketball, I mean, I'm a little biased. We may be a little biased, bro, but that's just being real. I don't think there's anywhere in the country, bro, that worked as hard as we did our years together. Like, no, I can't even think of another school that comes close to that. So, you know, just seeing you guys as well, man, like y'all going in the fire, you know, with me and grinding it out and stuff like that, it just made me fall in love with the process and working every single day, bro, with my brothers. Like, and it just came to fruition. Like, when I got that opportunity, man, like I was ready for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously you remember how it was back in the day, you know, it was a pack like that, but we still had the, you know, supporters and stuff like that. And, you know, just building up them years, man, and playing, you know, was great. But, you know, that injury, I still get emotional about that shit, bro. That was like the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with in my life, bro. Like you're saying, going from such a high to such a, you know, immediate low was very hard for me to deal with, especially, you know, being an 18-year-old kid, starting, you know, a Big 12 school, you know, on ESPN, you know, just enjoying life pretty much, you know what I'm saying? And that Oklahoma State game, bro, like I remember playing like it was yesterday, you know, caught a rebound, I'm pushing in transition, and literally just felt my knee just crack, like my whole kneecap just cracked down the middle in half, and I felt it, sharp pain. I remember getting it and like just rolling the ball to Keenan and like just looking at, you know, Tubby and just saying, but look, I gotta come out, man. Like this is not gonna work. If it, you know, Tubby, what are you talking about? He was like, keep playing, why are you stopping?
Yeah.
And I was just like, I said, coach, like, nah, like I'm done. Like I can't, like I did something, I know, like I'm done. And so I literally just kinda like hobbled off, didn't even really wait for him, and he called a timeout, you know. And then obviously Chris came to check me out. Shout out Chris.
Big
hand, you know what I'm saying?
I don't want to take away. Keep going.
So, you know, he checked me out and I pretty much told him what happened, man. And, you know, the next day when we flew back, I went to see, you know, my close friend and my guy, Dr. Scoville, and got the MRI, x-ray and everything, and pretty much got the news that, you know, I had a fracture, patellar fracture, split all the way down the middle. And I was going to need pretty much reconstructive surgery and, you know, I'd be out, you know, at least 14 months. I took that, you know, he kind of paused. Yeah. So I was kind of taking that information in, like, all right, 14 months, do some rehab, yada, this, yada, that. I said, okay, like, that's cool. Then he was like, but I got to let you know, it's like, I'm obligated to tell you this. He's like, it's less than, you know, 1% success rate for anybody that has this injury, primarily for basketball players. It's less than 1%. That come back and were able to play from this. She was like, so just know you may not be able to play again. And that destroyed me, bro. Like, I cut off. Like, depressed, in my room for, like, days, bro, not eating, like, not calling my parents. Like, again, going from starting playing, bro, like,
right,
to being told I may not play again was, like,
all in the span that quickly too. Like,
yeah.
You go. I remember you get on campus. Honestly, we came together. You're my roommate at the time. Yep. You're on a weight game plan. You're getting big. You're getting skilled. I'm like, honestly, he might be the chosen one out of all of us. Like, to be honest, like, he might be the one. This guy's so focused, determined. He's smart. I'm just like, this is the one. Like, you were killing early. Like, you're playing so well. Like, you're striving. You're almost the featured player, the face. And then you go through that injury. And I saw, like, literally, I saw you go from being in the gym every day, gaining all that weight. You're becoming like a man to broken, to hurt, to living with Tubby Smith after you had a surgery, to building back. There's so many emotions that you went through that time. I guess take me to the emotions. You kind of played it to start. You kind of been talking about it, but when you actually went through the procedure, when Scoville did tell you that stuff, in those deep and dark times when you were alone, what was that voice in your head telling you? Because there's one part of you that knows, I can do this. I've made myself. I've got here on one hand, but now I've faced something I've never faced before. Take me to that time and how you kind of built and worked yourself out of that pit that you were in.
Yeah, so after I got surgery, man, and, you know, I woke up, you know, just looking at my leg, it's bandaged up, you know, got the T-scope brace on, super just fat, swollen. I'm just like, you know, just kind of put my head back and just, like, here we go, you know, like, starts, you know what I'm saying, today. And not gonna lie, bro, that first week, you know, obviously, Tubby Smith didn't even hesitate. You know, it was just like, you come out with me, you living with me, you know, Miss Smith gonna take care of you. And, you know, anything you need, you know, I got you. You know, while we be on the road, you know, you're gonna be here. So that first week, because I didn't have to go to class or anything, because obviously I was on medication and stuff like that. But that first week, man, was very, very just when you really get to sit by yourself, you know, for a long time, you know, in a room, obviously, and I wasn't able to move around like that. So it was kind of just like I'm just looking at the ceiling, you know, and just thinking. Obviously, you know, just contemplating. Part of me was just like, you know, I had a part of me that was just saying like, yo, like it's over. It's over. Other side of me. 18
years old, yeah.
18 years old. Other side of me was who I am. That Jay Gray, like, hell nah, bro. Like, this ain't nothing. Like, you're going to get back right. You're going to prove, you know, you're going to be a success story. You're going to be one of the cases that, you know, succeed. And long nights, bro, just crying, like, not knowing what's going to happen, you know, kind of uncertainty. And what made it better, what kind of got me, you know, started getting me on my feet was I was knocked out, bro, off medication. Knocked out middle of the night. I think it was like 2 or 3 days after surgery. I hear like the door open. I'm high off this medication though. So like I'm like think I'm hallucinating stuff. I hear like the door open and I'm like half asleep. And bro, it's my mom's. So I told her I was getting surgery and I told her, I was like, yo, you don't have to come here. Like, it's cool. I'm going to be taken care of. You already know. Like, yeah. Bro, she didn't say a word to me. Like, she flew to Dallas and then drove 4 hours in the middle of the night to, you know, just be with me. Cause obviously she knew moms know. So she was like, I didn't even think twice about it. She's like, I just knew mentally, you know, you just needed me. And like, that meant like what I needed at that time was her.
Right.
At that point in time, like, and bro, I never like grabbed her and hold her so tight, like in my life, bro. And just like bawled like for like hours, bro. And it's just, she was like, you're going to be good. Like, she was like, you already know, growing up, you seen what me and your dad do. Like, you built for this. Like, this ain't nothing new to you. You know, you're going to get through it. Like, I'll be here with you. And, you know, it's just going to be, you know, part of your journey that you're going to be able to tell. And, you know, she stayed with me for like, you know, a week. And just pretty much got me back on my feet, man. Just made me more positive minded. And like I said, just anything I needed to hear at that, you know, specific point in time, like she was there and told me exactly what I needed to hear to kind of get me back on my feet. So, you know, that's when I hit up, you know, Chris and just say, yo, I'm ready to start rehab. And, you know, we kind of just, you know, went to town. It was just a long road, 15 months, bro, to be exact. 15 months. Wasn't able to bend my leg, bro, for 10 months. Sleeping with a big machine in bed, so it bends my leg for me. So, like, my leg, all skinny, muscle atrophy, you know, all these things that when I was, the pain was kind of going away, and then I was able to at least do, you know, somewhat the Alter G or, you know, something. Just seeing how skinny my leg was, bro, like, scared me. I was just like, yo, I don't think we're going to be able to get this back, you know what I'm saying? And he was just like, yo, take it a day at a time, man. Day at a time, day at a time, day at a time. So he was a huge, 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 huge factor, bro, in my recovery process. And that's why, you know, he's, me and him, you already know, same with you. Yeah. We forever, you know, indebted to each other. So,
Justin, your story, this is your one freshman year, but this sounds like a 10-year kind of story. The grind and the grit of every day, building back, your mom coming, helping you get through that moment. This is, it's admirable to be honest, because you go from a high, like you're proving, you're working, you got to Texas Tech. You've proved on one side you could do it academically for even getting the offer, to you're proving to your dad, like, I'm starting. And then you go through that injury and then you fight back. You get to a place where we go to Canada, you are back, you're starting, you're playing well, and then you play your sophomore season. And the coach that took a chance, that when you were in that McDonald's, finish your little Big Mac, whatever you ordered, he called you, he got that offer. The coach that gave you that offer, he dips. Take me to that time, because it's like adversity after adversity after adversity. It doesn't stop. What were you emotionally feeling when Tubby Smith left and departed for Memphis?
I feel like, first and foremost, we all had similar, you know, emotions. I feel like mine was a little different because of what I had to go through to get back.
Exactly.
I wanted to play for Tubby Smith. Yeah. Like, I wanted to play for him more than like anything. So it's like, that was the only thing in my mind, the whole recovery process and rehab process. I was just like, yo, get back right. Like, I'm trying to get back on the court. And because you already know, bro, we all love like playing for this man. Like,
I did, yes.
That's why we all went there. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we keep it honest, obviously Texas Tech, Lubbock is a beautiful city. Love it to death. It's always going to be a part of me. But, you know, Tubby Smith was definitely, you know, a huge factor, you know, in my decision. And I wanted to play for him. I wanted to, you know, just be one of those, you know, just players that, you know, helped elevate his career. You know, the Rajon Rondos, the, you know, all these people that, you know, he's coached over the years. So when – I'm sure you remember this. You already know what I'm about to say.
Man. Hey, Justin, if obviously you guys ain't see it. Justin is looking to the sky. He laughing. I'm laughing. Like, we know, but keep going.
So we all sleeping, obviously. It's in the morning. I usually don't have my ringer on, bro, but I had it on and I woke up to an ESPN notification. So like, I didn't think anything of it. Keep in mind though, you remember like when we came back after we lost to Butler and then we was back in the weight room. And then obviously when we was rooming together, we would look at Twitter and we seen the rumors.
Yes.
And us being real ones, real Red Raiders for life.
Yeah, yes, sir.
You know, are you leaving? Are you leaving? Like, you know what I'm saying? And it was a no. And so, like, that kind of reassured us, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then waking up to that and looking over my phone, like, eyes, like, half blurry. I'm looking up. I just see, like, Tubby Smith was the first thing I saw. So, like, I woke up. I clicked it. No, you already know, bro. And everybody listening, I'm not stressing this enough. When I say we all simultaneously opened the door at the same time.
Yeah, we did. We did.
Bro, we opened the door at the same time and all looking at each other like, yo, what? We was like, man. And then we all just sat there, bro, and we just talked like about what we gonna do. Because obviously we were all close. We were the core.
Right.
And we all loved each other. We all loved playing with each other. So it was kind of like, you know, pretty much hearing everybody's like perspective on what they're going to do next or like what's their initial thoughts. And obviously we didn't know, you know, who's in contention for, you know, taking the job next, but you know, we all agreed, like if we all stay, we would like to stay, but you know, the coach coming in had a big part to do with that. So right. at the same time, it's like, you got to do what's best for yourself. But yeah, bro, that was just like, for me, it was just like, dang, man, like, 15 months, bro, like came back and we made the tournament and it's just like, and he's gone. I was like, yes. Dang, man. I was like, we made a tournament though, bro. Like first time in years, bro. Like
right. With
the core that he picked, like it's right. Work. Like it's, everything is starting to come to fruition, bro. Like it's working out the way it's supposed to work out for us. Journalists, people on, like everybody talking about our young core, bro. Like, and we hooping versus the best of them, young sophomores. We hooping, bro. Like,
facts.
Like we start. That's when it like really Tech started to get that, you know, connotation it has now. You know, as far as, you know, just with street dogs. You know, obviously, you know, back in the day for sure, but you know, it's been a while since, you know, Tech has had that connotation. Now it's back. You know, that excitement, energy. You know, and just even when I'm overseas, bro. Like, damn, you go to Tech, bro.
Yeah,
damn, that's fire. I love hearing that, bro. Because like it was never like that. No, you know that, bro. Like right, people used to laugh. You know what I'm saying when you say Tech, but now it's like it means something. So yeah, when that happened, bro, it was just, I didn't really know what to do. Like, I didn't know if coach was gonna hit me up, and sure enough, they did. The next day, they was hit. they were calling. Hello,
right.
But nah, man, just honestly having that conversation with y'all, like, that's how I knew we was all going to stay, bro. Because, like, just seeing everybody was like, nah, like, bro, I want to play with you, bro. Like, I want to play, like, we brothers. Like, we got to finish this out. Like, that's why we came here. And I feel like that's kind of when our love for Tech truly, truly got genuine, bro. Like,
right.
Because we all said, like, bro, we can't leave this place, bro. Like, we love this place. Like,
yeah.
People love us here. You know right. What I'm saying? It's like, we're starting to build something. Like, we can't leave.
I totally agree. And I think not just with your story, even with mine, I think you see parallels to where I went through an injury early on. You went through an injury early on. You faced adversity. I did as well. We faced changes together. Right. Absolutely. But it's your ability to stay motivated through those tough times. You talked and you spoke on your mom coming, helping you build through that point. Then you go through a coaching change to where it's like, I've been working so hard. Like, I literally live with this man.
Right.
We have an emotional connection off right. the court as well. So it's more than just a basketball decision.
People don't understand that. People don't understand that, bro. They don't understand that. So when people ask me about Tucker, I'm like, that's my guy, bro. Like, I love him. Like, he looked out for me, like, in my deepest, darkest times, bro. Like, and no matter what, how the decision was made, whatever the case is, like, he's called me and apologized. So, like, we good. So it's not, I don't have that negative connotation for him, you know, for leaving. And, like, he helped me learn so much, bro. It's like, he's a big reason why I'm the player I am today. Like, he pretty much prepped us. You know, for obviously when Beard got here, you know, kind of took
and off, bro. And not to cut you off, right? When I'm thinking of this, right? Don't get me wrong. You were the man coming in. I was as well. Like, and even scheme wise, I would get the ball a lot with Tubby. Thanks. And it's like, you would get the ball a lot with Tubby. Like, and then we saw a switch. We got a new coach. Yep. And it's almost like you and I, for lack of better words, sacrifice more than anyone.
Yes.
More than anyone.
Bro. Absolutely.
So even thinking about you, you go in from a time of you're building back, you're going back, you're going after this one coach, and then you're sacrificing. You're like, wait, I grinded for this. Like, I did all this for this.
Facts.
Yet, how hard was it for you? Because for me, honestly, I went through a time where it was tough.
Bro, I remember how you was snapping on us when you didn't give you the ball in the post. But Beard really wasn't tripping like that. You know what I'm saying? Because that wasn't our game like style anymore. It was more the motion offense, spread it, and then you would kind of get dump downs. But as far as like Tubby was, no, post up on the block, feed him, go.
I loved it. Yeah,
exactly. That was your game. But I'm glad you bro. I don't think we ever talked about this, honestly, bro.
Like, I swear.
And I noticed that, honestly, that coaching change, and I said to myself, I was like, it affects me and No probably the most. At first, I kind of took it as, you know, because I didn't really know, you know, Coach Beard like that. You know, obviously, I loved his energy he came in with, how passionate he was. You know, I kind of felt comfortable because, you know, we talked to TG, you know, about it. You know, he was an assistant coach, you know, for 10 years. So, you know, he knows about, you know, the tech, you know, just lifestyle and stuff. So. But I ain't gonna lie, bro. I was hot. Like, I ain't gonna lie. I was hot, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, bro, I ain't touching the ball anymore. Like, I ain't getting my pull-ups I'm usually getting. I'm like, dang, man. Like, this is a different way of playing. But at the same time, it's like, you know, when Coach Adams came back, and then, you know, you put his little defense magic, you know, that tech defense. Then I saw how well we were playing, bro. Like, that's kind of when I was like, you know what? It's only going to work if you have some people that sacrifice.
Mm.
It's only going to work if you have some people that sacrifice. Every great team, bro, has people that sacrifice. Being the guy or being the man, whatever the case is, they sacrifice and do things that the team needs in order to win games. May not be in the stat line, may not be in the box score, you know, whatever the case may be. But, you know, for me, I went into, you know, Beard's office and, you know, Coach Adams and just talked, and, you know, obviously, you know, he pretty much was just honest about, you know, how the offense was going to be and, you know, how I can, you know, kind of involve myself, but I wasn't really, you know, involved that much, but, you know, more of, you know, what could I do to play? That's pretty much what I asked him. And obviously, you know, defense was the first thing to come, and you know me better than anybody. That's always been my first love, defense, blocking shots, you know, all that stuff. So I pretty much accepted that role and kind of fell in love with that. So I said, okay, cool. If that's going to make me play and play a lot of minutes, then I'm gonna put all my focus and time and energy like into playing defense and doing the little things, taking charges, bro. Like, you and me was battling for the belt, you know what I'm saying? Like, when we was there, always taking charges, you know, just being a help side, you know, just altering shots, like, you know, coming from weak side or, you know, getting steals, whatever the case was, bro. Like, just doing any little thing to, you know, to help the team win. And, you know, obviously the ball was going through Keenan as it should, because he was crazy. Bro. Like, and it was working. The way we was playing was working. So I kind of looked at it as like, all right, what I'm doing, I'm playing like 30 minutes a game. I may have some games where I get 17, 18. You know what I'm saying? Not to throw no names out there, Baylor. You know what I'm saying?
What's up, J-Bob? What's up, Bob?
So, anytime I play Baylor, you already know, I was always with that. But,
what's up, Bob?
But nah, I mean, like, I was just really, you know, appreciative with just how we were playing as a unit. Obviously, we changed the whole dynamic of our offense, but, like, it was working, and we were winning games. And that was the most important thing for me. So, like I said, man, like, I don't think we would have been as successful if it wasn't for players like yourself and I to sacrifice. Selfish play, I guess you could say, you know, when you want to get the ball and score and stuff like that. But, you know, for the betterment of the team.
Moving on, and we got to the Elite Eight run, and you were a huge part of that team, a starter on that team, a senior of that team. And you talk about sacrifice. You literally, it's only going to work if somebody sacrificed. You sacrificed your body that year. I mean, you were hurt. You talked about getting your knee drained after every single game. Do you think that sacrifice helped, though? Like, it helped in our mission, but specifically for yours, because you had big dreams. You came from a Harvard offer to Texas Tech. You're starting. You go through all these things. But selfishly, I know there's a lot of people listening. They're like, wait, he wanted to get to where? He wanted to get to the league, NBA. Like, he's sacrificing his body for a team, his team goals. But what about him? Like, you're putting yourself through all this pain, grinding each and every day for this team. You get to this point. And then after the season, you have to get a procedure done. Now your league looks are kind of dwindling and going down the drain because of the sacrifice. Is the emotions the same? Like, I did this for the team, yes? Or it's like, I just sacrificed, I lost, and now it's like there's no hope almost. Like, how were you feeling after we got to the Elite Eight? But selfishly in you, you want to get to this level, but you can't even get to that threshold. You can't get to NBA looks. Like, how did you feel in that time?
Man, no, that's a good little segment right there. A lot of people don't know about that last year. Only y'all know, obviously, because you're on the team and y'all were with me. But, you know, a lot of fans and, you know, supporters of Tech, like, don't know that I was injured most of the year and just playing through partially fractured knee again. Dr. Scova told me not to play. Beard told me not to play. I took about a week to decide. I just kept going back and forth, bro. Like, you know, obviously, you know, I had dreams and aspirations of, you know, making it to the league and, you know, at least getting a shot, you know, of some sort. And I definitely thought, you know, I was well on my way. But, you know, part of me was just like, yeah, you could sit out and, you know, and be good and not really risk, you know, injury or further, you know, damaging it more. But I was like, man, this is my last year. I came in with these guys. Like, I done been through everything with these guys. This is it for me. Like, I'm going to regret it if I don't play. I'm always going to regret that if I don't play. Like, I wouldn't have played in the first, you know, round of 64, 62, and then, you know, the round of 32, then the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight. Like, bro, those are memories that are going to, like, last me a lifetime. Like, that shit bonded us, bro, forever. Like, I will never forget those games and just being in those locker rooms, like, with y'all. And that's kind of what made that decision for me. Because at first, I was just like, I was kind of playing with fire at that point. Because I remember Beer said I looked like Bambi. When I was when I was playing defense, because I was just like kind of sticking out my leg because it was in such pain, bro. Like in the slow, he was like, "You moving like Bambi out there?" I was just like, "Man, what do you want me to do?" Like, I got a cyst in my knee; like, it's partially fractured. Like, what do you want me to do? And he was like, "Get treatment and fix it." So you already know, like, you were in the locker room.
Yeah,
when Chris did the textbook, you know, slamming it on my knee to try to pop this cyst in my knee, like, over and over again, bro. Like, and I'm doing this every week. And people don't, like, realize how much, like, pain, bro. Like, I really, like, fucking went through to, like, play for, like, my brothers. Like,
not to cut you off, but literally, if you're listening to Mind Bully Podcast, Norris of the Acid, Justin Gray, picture a big-ass textbook. This guy's a genius. He had big-ass textbook. Chris big head ass Williams used to smack a textbook on his knee. And I'm sitting there like, what the hell is going on? If only fans knew what he's going through to actually just even play. It was crazy. Sorry, bro. Crazy. Keep going.
No, you good, bro. Biting the towel, bro. Like screaming. And like, he's doing it at least like 6, 7, 8 times. Like, you're right. Like, he is whacking it. Like you said, like, you talking about like, yo, like, whoa, like, is this like by the book? Like, is this what you was taught? Like, we all asking questions like that. And it got to the point, bro. I was getting it after every practice, bro. Like, it was crazy. And then, like, obviously a part of me was just like, yo, is this worth it? Like, is this worth it, bro? All this pain, all this struggle, like, is it worth it, you know, to the detriment of my health, you know, my body? And again, bro, like, it's just me. Like, obviously, you know, if it was another person, I'm sure it would have been different. But just the love I've had for Texas Tech, Red Raider Nation, you know, my teammates, you know, my brothers, that made it worth it for me. And I feel like I was still able, part of me was saying I would only do it if I was still able to produce in some way, aspect, or form, which I still was. So that was like my biggest thing. Like, if I was still able to do something, then I wanted to play. Chris did something magical, bro. But I started dunking in the games. I was blocking shots, bro. I was like doing stuff that I wasn't doing for like months. So yeah, bro, that was just like a magical run, man. And like, we just needed that, you know, we needed that run. And obviously, you know, the rest is history. Next year, y'all go to the, you know, national championship, you know, build off of that. So it's just, I don't regret it, bro. I don't regret it at all. But it crushing my dreams for the league in terms of, you know, having all these teams and, you know, scouts contact me and having all these NBA agents and, you know, talking and, you know, having a lot of interest and then getting that surgery, you know, after the season and it just going ghost, nothing. You know, just I'm at square one now. You know, I just had surgery. I don't have any NBA offers. You know, I don't got any NBA interest. I don't even have any overseas agent interest. So I'm at square one, bro, like nothing. So I started hustling, man. Like, you know, I asked for help. You know, I tried to get help, you know, from Tech, but, you know, it's kind of like, you know, kind of just like sketchy, you know, kind of just, I wasn't really comfortable with it. So I kind of just took it on my own tuition, bro. And like, I was DMing agents. I was emailing agents. I was sending my videos, you know, to NBA scouts and just networking, bro, like by myself, like on my computer, like just doing like whatever I could to, you know, get a look, bro, get an opportunity somewhere. And, you know, I did. And, you know, it kind of, you know, the overseas, you know, vibe. And not to say I didn't really expect myself to play overseas, but I was open to it because I've always wanted to travel. And just that first year, I kind of fell in love with it. Like, I really liked it.
You go on and you're playing currently 4-year pro. But just to hear your story, it's inspirational and it's motivational. A lot of people don't have or can't just find that motivation through each tough time that you face, through the injuries, through the coaching changes, through just mental battles, through emotional struggles that you're able to just go through and keep moving through the hurdles that life throws at you, but you're still motivated. A lot of people, it's hard to connect with that. I guess if I remove that experience and these experience from Justin, if I removed all these times and these trials, what would I take and what would I be removing from your character if I removed all these times?
I would just say, man, you would just be removing how I kind of deal with, you know, adversity. I'm kind of accustomed to it now in terms of I don't fold when adversity hits. You know, I elevate, you know, I look forward, you know, to the adversity. Like, I laugh in his face, you know, like I love when adversity hit, bro. Like, and Tech made me that way, you know, playing in those hostile environments. You know, you got Kansas, West Virginia fans, you know, calling my mom by her name and dropping F-bombs and, you know, this, that, and the third, like, just being able to be like locked in and like, you know, and, you know, hit a shot and like smile at, you know, the fans that just said something, like, I don't know, but like, it just, it makes me bring my best out, you know, when adversity hit, when things aren't going our way, like, that's when you find out who the real dogs. When adversity hit, like, that's who you find out, like, who really liked that, you know, who really with the smoke.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Cause it's easy to fold, bro. Like, anytime, like, we were so many games, we didn't came back, like, down, you know, 17, 18 points, you know, obviously in the 12, which is ridiculous to do. But, you know, when that adversity hit, it's like, do we argue or do we come together and, like, you know, lock in? And you were a huge part, bro. Like, obviously, I'm not sure if, you know, everybody knows this, but you were definitely the most passionate teammate I've ever had in my life. Like, in my life, bro. Like, your passion, like, when we were losing at halftime, you punching, you know, bathroom stalls and, you know, getting on everybody, bro. Like, not giving a fuck, like, what anybody has to say. Like, you know, you just showing that passion, how much love and, you know, and how much care you have for this team and us wanting to win and us playing the right way, how we know how to play. You know, we needed that. You know, we just needed somebody to just be like, yo, like, yo, why y'all effing around? But like, why are we playing like this, bro? Like, do y'all not want this shit as bad as I do, bro? Like, and when y'all see you damn near about to cry, bro, because you yelling so hard, like, that shit hit me. And like, it was those type of experiences like throughout the year where I was just like, you know what? Like, my boy here, bro, like, went through two back-to-back injuries, dog.
Yeah.
Back-to-back. You came back from one, about to start the season, and you do this thing, the same thing on the other foot, bro. I'm just like, man, I'm just like, bro. And like, and you were so inspirational to me with that because I can't even like process that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't imagine if I did the same thing on the opposite knee after coming back from this. Like, you know what I'm saying? But like seeing you and how you took that, you know, and how you were such a, just a big aspect on the bench, like huge on the bench for us, bro. Like constantly talking to me, you know, damn near being a coach, you know what I'm saying? Like damn near being a coach and you embracing that role and you taking that role, bro, definitely took us a lot, you know, further than, you know, we really should have went, but it was because you embraced that role and you took it in and you sacrificed yourself. Again, that's the key word. You sacrificed yourself. You could have been on the bench not saying nothing, bro. Just cool and kicking it, you know, wait till you get back healthy and come play and try to get your numbers. You know what I'm saying?
I love when a guest like you comes on and gives me my flowers. Yes, I'll take it, but bro,
absolutely.
It's you, bro. I think we both went through times, right? The adversity was able to charge us and to give so much to the team. But now if I'm looking back, and I didn't even expect to say this, but now if I'm looking back, you really notice your footprint that you left on the team and the university, because it's like a lot of these teams and these places that we've been through to, I don't know if you have, I haven't felt that real charge like this since Tech. I know you probably would say the same. So it almost makes you realize what you did at a place and the impact you were able to leave. And it allows you to be, you know, charged and motivated in the steps that you leave everywhere you go. You go from Bristol, then you go to Kosovo, Portugal, Poland. You know that every place that I'm going to, I'm able to leave an impact because of what I did at Tech. Right. It charges you in a different way that motivates you each and every way. I think that's special what you just said, because I know it was facing and targeted towards me. But when I hear you talk about me, I honestly think of everything I saw in you. Like, you were able to charge yourself up, build yourself up through the injuries and pour into teammates. I think that was able to leave a footprint that allowed us to go and make it to the Final Four. This is just a one-off question. Selfishly, right? You work so hard, Elite Eight, then you see us in the last game. And then honestly, everybody likes to be appreciated, right? And they all look to the Final Four team. That's the best team ever, blah, 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 blah. How does that make you feel?
So I was saying the amount of people that asked me that, bro, after that obviously transpired. But it was almost like people expected me to be mad. Like the fans, like there's so many fans that like hit me up and they were just saying like, oh man, like how do you feel? Like y'all didn't get to, you know, the Final Four or whatever. I said, man, like I'm happy, bro. Like first of all, like that's my school, that's my university. And like I still got a brother that like still plays and was a huge implement part in that. So like I'm celebrating my brother's success. Like I'm not hating on it. Like right. I want them to win a national championship. I want Tech to win every year. Like that's what anybody should want. You know, if you previously played for, you know, a university, you shouldn't want, you know, no team to outdo you or anything like that. Like you should want that. You should push for that, you know? So yeah, that was like a common theme, bro. But yeah, I was happy, bro. Like I stayed up like literally 6 a.m, like watching y'all game, like in the UK and just going crazy, you know, out with everybody. I had my jersey on, like just repping hard as hell, man. And it was just a remarkable game, remarkable season, man. And it was just this close, bro. Like I cried, bro. I ain't gonna lie. I ain't mind gonna hold you, bro. Like
of course, I cried to you.
I cried, bro. Like mainly because like I, bro, you my brother. Like I knew, like I know that feeling of like when it's over, especially when you get to the goal,
right?
And you've been preaching this since you came to Tech in 2014, bro. Like that was the goal. Like and you went through all that stuff with us and Keenan and Zach. And like, you finally got there, bro. Like, it may not have been with us, but like, we helped, you know, you get to that point and you finally got there, bro. Like, that was for all of us, really. Like, that's how I felt, you know, watching the game. I said, damn, like, no, there for all of us, bro. Like, this is live. Like, he in the national championship game. Like, this is what it's all about, bro. Like, and when that happened, bro, like, I was just like, damn, like, that whole feeling of when we lost to Villanova just came back, like, literally again, like that, bro. Like, I started, I was like, damn, like, it's over, man. Like, they had a remarkable season this close, man, this close.
Even for me, just seeing you guys leave and I had my last year, I felt empty, honestly. Like, I'm like, these are the guys I came in with. Justin Gray, Keenan Evans, Zach Smith, Isaiah Manderson, he left, but these are the guys, the Fab Five I came in with. It's just me now. I felt almost depleted, like I needed something. And just to see you guys, I kind of reverted back to our conversations and what we wanted to do at Tech. Our long view on where we saw Tech kind of charged me and kept me where I was. But I just think, quite honestly, it's something about you. The inspiration, you speak to the passion that you have, you speak to just the mindset that you have, that you're able to stay locked in and refocus and recharge through adversity. And just all these different things wrapped around your story. It's so impactful. I know a lot of people listening, they go through life trying to find the next thing to be charged about or motivated about. And how do I live out my next day? And your ability to find the smallest detail to say, okay, I'm going to be charged by that to take me there. Mm-hmm. And you just stepping and climbing and climbing and climbing. I think that's so special. The very special individuals, they just need a little thing to be motivated about. They can take from a mustard seed and grow a damn village and grow a damn force because they just need something. And your ability to find in the smallest, in the darkest times, something to be motivated about, something to smile about, something to charge yourself up. Mm-hmm. Your ability to take the smallest thing and convert that in XXX and keep going, I think it's so special. You talk about going to Bristol, to Kosovo. Now you're in Kosovo at a tough time. You're mentally broken. Tough things happening. Mm-hmm. In your professional career, what keeps you charged? What mustard seed are you looking for the next season? When you're in your deepest, darkest times, how do you stay motivated for the next year and the next year and your next year? Because playing overseas is tough. Honoring your role on the team, honoring your season as a player is tough. How do you stay locked into what Justin Gray wants to do? Yeah, you're gone from Tech, all these things. You don't have your mom, 18-year-old mom, to just fly to Kosovo to be there with you. Right. How do you charge and take that little mustard seed and say, okay, I'm still want to do this. I still want to go. I still want to charge. How are you able to piggy yourself up and keep going?
Honestly, man, like, no pun intended, but my mind bully has always been I'm very hard on myself, like always have been, and it's a blessing and a curse. You know, there'll be times, you know, growing up where I have a bad game and I don't come out of my room for 3 days. Don't eat, don't do nothing, like just drink water and just, like, it was that bad, you know what I'm saying? But obviously it's gotten better, but like I've always been so hard on myself. I have my own personal goals. Obviously every season, you know, you have team goals and, you know, I come there, be professional, you know, trying to be, you know, a leader some way, shape or form. You know, just have that team energy environment. I always bring positive, you know, energy to practice and stuff like that. And, you know, when you're just surrounded by guys who don't have that same mindset or, you know, just that same just urge to win, bro. Like, it's so frustrating, bro. It's like I'm playing in games and we losing or whatever the case is. And like you got, you know, guys, you know, getting drunk on the bus on the way back from games or, you know, smoking cigarettes or, you know, whatever the case is, bro. And I'm just like sitting there like, yo, this is crazy. Yes. You know what I'm saying? Like, but then that's when I revert back to like, okay, like, you know, what do I want to do, you know, for myself? Once you kind of realize, you know, the situation that you're in, you can either, you know, fold or, you know, you can make the best out of the situation. Whenever, you know, there's a place that's hard or, you know, difficult to live in, for example, you know, like Kosovo, you know, that was very, you know, depressful time for me because there was nothing really in the city besides like a gaming center, a grocery store, and a barbershop. So there was almost so much I could really do off the court to kind of get my mind off basketball. And that's kind of when I was really like struggling, you know, with myself, especially when I had a bad game, bro. If I had a bad game, like when I was there, it was, you know, just that constant battle within my mind, you know, just saying like, you know, like, damn, you know, are you like that? Like, you having a bad game versus these guys, you know what I'm saying? It's just that always, it just kind of motivates me to kind of prove it to myself. I don't like to prove stuff to other people, bro. I could care less. Honestly, I've always been like that. I don't try to, you know, unless it's, you know, with obviously my parents or something like that, you know, something that's, you know, near and dear to my heart, like other people's opinions and concerns or, you know, comments, whatever they have to say about me, like I could care less, you know, good or bad. Like I appreciate it. You know, I just appreciate the attention, period. But in terms of anything that I do in my life, especially now where I'm at, you know, I do for, you know, myself and to prove it to myself, you know, to prove to myself what type of player I am, what type of player I'm capable of becoming. And every single year, you know, I'm taking away things that I, you know, I can improve on. And in the off season, bro, I'm like a little kid again. Like literally we talk about me coming to Lubbock soon and I can't wait to get started, bro. Like I've already started here, but I'm like itching to get back to Tech, bro. And just like being just a locked out, you know, zone mode and just working out 3-4 times a day and just getting back to, you know, what I need to work on and just apply it, you know, to my game for next year and see how it pans out and then take something away, you know, from next year and then work on that.
That's beautiful. I think, and I just talked to my last guest, DeMarcus Holland, on that.
Yeah, I heard that.
The best thing is the exploration that you have in the offseason to be charged. Like every player, every hooper, everybody knows that that's time is sacred. You talked about coming to Lubbock, being in the gym by yourself at odd hours, just exploring your game, being able to be charged and recharge. And that's special. I think that's beautiful.
Absolutely.
But moving on from that, just basketball, we talked about that. Again, I could talk to Justin for a while on this because I think your story is a special, just an inspirational, just a passionate story that I love to hear. But moving on from that, I want to ask you, because you started this clothing brand, Filthy Humans.
Yes, sir.
What does living filthy mean to you? First of all, actually, what is a filthy human in your definition?
A filthy human, man, the way, you know, me and my best friend from Tampa here, we created it. Basically, I've always been into fashion, bro. May not like, you know, not all about, you know, the fashion shows and, you know, trying to, you know, dress, you know, the part, but like I've always known like what looks good and like what doesn't, how to piece stuff together, you know what I'm saying? Like I've always been good with that. And just being around, you know, people like yourself, like you got a great sense of style, you know what I'm saying? Like a lot of our team did. Just seeing that, like, I've always just wanted to do something, you know, creative. Yeah. I'm huge in creativity, bro. Like, you know, one of the things that, you know, I did a lot growing up was I used to draw a lot, like big time. And I could still do a little something if I took time. But, you know, like when I was growing up, like in high school, just being in my room, like that was kind of like to get my mind off of basketball, I'll just, you know, sketch stuff. So, you know, with him, it's, you know, he created the name Filthy. It was just Filthy, you know, first.
Isn't that like Seattle slang?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where it came from. That's exactly where it came
that's
from.
Filthy. That's Filthy. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly where it came from. So he just had Filthy and I was just like, man, like it's missing something, like just to make it sound, you know, just like different, but like it has to be like simplistic at the same time. And he was just like, he was throwing out words, you know what I'm saying? And you know, some sounded good. And then I was just like, nah, it needs to be like just very simple, bro. I was like, humans, like on that bit, like Filthy Humans. Yeah. And then he was just like, oh, no, he's like, nah, I like that. Like, that's hard. And then we started that. And then, you know, we talked about, you know, what does that mean, you know, in our definition. And so basically, you know, being a filthy human is, you know, basically being somebody, you know, in any aspect of life, you know, being just dope, creative, you know, fun, you know, unique and like in your own, you know, dope way, like whatever you do. So if you're, you know, a musician, you know, you filthy on the keys, you know, if you're a basketball player, you know, you filthy with the rock, you know what I'm saying? Or you dunking something filthy, like, you know, tennis player, like, you know,
that's tough.
It applies to like all aspects of life. So like, and you know, a lot of people, you know, especially in Seattle, you know, on the West Coast, a lot of people be, you know, be using that. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, when you be watching games, you know, somebody do something crazy, the announcer's, oh, that was filthy. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's a word that we're really trying to like redefine, because obviously it has that negative connotation to it. But now we're in 2022, bro. So it's like you have a lot of words now that are, you know, used for positive, you know, punctuation, right, but are actually, you know, a negative originally speaking, were a negative term. So like
that's where that Harvard coming out. But he
so he basically, makes, bro, yeah, y'all mixing them up, no? Mixing them up.
I love that though. I love it. If you listen to the Mind Bully podcast, you filthy. You filthy. We filthy. I love it. I think anybody who hasn't seen the brand Filthy Humans, you should go plug your stuff. I don't know what it is
exactly. Oh, yes. Filthy Humans on IG. And then we got a website, filthy-humans.com.
There was this red shirt y'all just had. It was sold out XL. I need it. It was clean.
I got
I need that.
Where we get it printed at is actually in Lubbock. Okay. We get our stuff printed in Lubbock because I got the plug in Lubbock. So, you know, we get all the stuff there. So when I go there, I can make that for you, whatever you need. I got you.
I love it. I think to close this out, I'm going to ask a fan question, actually.
Absolutely.
Kenna, she says, who has been your biggest inspiration?
My biggest inspiration, man. Are we talking about in life or in basketball?
Kenna literally said, it ain't my question. Who has been your biggest inspiration? You can take it however you want to.
Okay, but I'll answer it both ways. So in basketball, no already notice, LeBron James, a.k.a. King James, a.k.a. Goat James, a.k.a. Chosen One.
Got to.
So yeah, man, he was just huge, just, you know, in my basically overall just love for the game. Grew up watching LeBron and, you know, try to, you know, emulate his game and just add, you know, pieces of his game, you know, to mine. And, you know, obviously I've developed my own unique game, but, you know, it's definitely, you know, based off of, you know, him. In life, I would say, you know, my biggest, you know, influence or inspiration would have to be my mom, my dad, honestly, man, like just seeing, that's kind of what like keeps me going. Like now that you asked that, me thinking about it more, you know, like when I'm struggling or, you know, I'm stressed about something or I'm down bad, bro. Like I literally just think about literally, you know, what my parents had to do literally to provide for me and my brother. So it's like my mom working three jobs, you know, and just making it casual, not complaining, cooking, you know, cleaning, not complaining, waking up, doing it every single day. I'm like, I know she's tired. Like, I know she's probably on the verge of, you know, passing out and, you know, but never complains, you know what I'm saying? And was my rock, you know, anytime like I was stressed or whatever, like she was never stressed. So, and same thing with my dad, like, you know, him working, you know, crazy hours, you know, just to be able to provide for me. And that's just what keeps me going, bro. Like it motivates me. Like, you know, if my parents can do it, like it's the least what I can do. Like if they do it, it's the least what I can do, bro.
I love it. And I think, Justin, I'm so thankful you came on this podcast just to hear your story, just even some things that I didn't know. I'm so excited to offer people hearing this because I think you embody what hard work is, for lack of a better word. Hard work, motivated, charged, passionate, spirited individual that serves and cares about people. Mm-hmm. Like you talk about caring too much as a child. Mm-hmm. Now you're just this person that's going to be do big things in his life. I think that's so special, genuinely. So from the bottom of my heart, I'm so thankful you came on here. But my last question, overcoming your mind bully, what does that mean? And the practical steps, what does it look like in your day? How do you overcome that negative voice?
Devil works in mysterious ways, man. I believe in that, you know, wholeheartedly, which is why, you know, I take every single day, you know, by faith. You know, I wake up and I treat people, you know, and I do things, you know, the way that it should be done. You know, like you walk into a room, you know, you greet people, you say thank you, you know, you hold open the door, you know, for women or whatever the case is. Like, I'm just a good, like, I have very, 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 very humble, like, good morals that, like, are the foundation of, like, who I am. And it's become more prominent now, like the older I get, especially when I'm meeting, you know, people from all aspects of life now that I'm traveling. But, you know, being able to, you know, communicate with somebody on a deeper, you know, intellectual level, you know, from, I don't know, wherever these people are from that I meet, it's like, I'm not going to let negativity take over my day.
Mm.
You know, life is not promised tomorrow. So why would I spend today being worried about the negativity, it affecting my day, it affecting things that I'm supposed to be getting done today, you know, when I can just have a positive mindset and, you know, not be stressed by it. You know, if it's not going to, you know, if it's not affecting me directly, then I'm not going to stress over it. So like my mind bully, I would just say like, you know, obviously in terms of basketball, it's just, you know, being hard on myself, but you know, in life it's just not really letting negativity, you know, overwhelm you or overconsume you in life to the point to where, you know, you fold. And like I said, it's a constant battle. You know, everybody I feel like has, you know, a version of their own mind bully in some aspect, way, shape or form. But, you know, with mine, I don't let it win, bro. You got to like, I control it. You know, I control, you know, my positivity, my mood, my energy, my aura, you know, every single day. Like I control that. I don't let negativity or somebody or an outside factor, you know, control what I'm feeling. You know, I got way too much self-love, bro.
If you're listening to this podcast, bro, and you're not charged, I don't think you have a pulse because that just got me going. That got me going. I'm like, yes, sir. J5, bro. Thank you so much, bro. Absolutely, I love you, bro. I'm so thankful you got on here. I could do 3 more episodes with you. But so thankful that you got on this podcast, bro.
Absolutely, bro. My pleasure, bro. No, I appreciate you, man. Everything, man. Like I said, I love you. I appreciate, you know, just our relationship, you know, our stories, you know, essentially growing up into men with each other. You know what I'm saying? So it's just something that, you know, I'm never going to forget, man. And, you know, I can't wait to see you when I go, you know, to Lubbock.
You get this
TBT thing popping. So it's going to be fun, man. I'm glad, like I said, you know, to be back with you and, you know, Zach and, you know, Nemo and all those guys. So it's definitely going to be a hell of an experience and give something that Lubbock to be excited for.
Mr. Texas Tech himself, man. Again,
that's you, no.
From Tampa to Tech, man. Yes, I appreciate it, bro. Love.
All love, bro. All love, no. Appreciate you, my guy.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Mind Bully Podcast. My dog, J5, appreciate you coming on and the support. I really appreciate that. If you like this episode, if you like this content, do me one favor. Leave a rating and a 5-star review. It means the world for this podcast, seriously. From the bottom of my heart, another EP. Peace and love.
Genix, you going off?